Hello and welcome back to the Flourish Travel Health Podcast. Thanks for tuning in with us this year. Today, Jaden and I are going to do a bit of a 2021 year in review.
Yeah, we thought it'd be kind of like interesting to take a look back at 2021 in terms of health, travel, all that. So the first obvious thing that I wanted to chat about is COVID. Obviously, we've had the introduction of, you know, various vaccines, travel restrictions, and of course, I wanted to kind of hear what your predictions for 2022 are.
Sure. Yeah, it's been COVID, and I guess that's, you know, that's just the reality of the situation of 2021. And yeah, we've made great progress, but you know, what we're looking for in the future, I think we're going to continue to see lots of testing. And I think we're going to see more booster doses, more, some new vaccines coming out. The Novavax vaccine is going to be imminently out, I think. And how that plays into the mix is not completely clear to me, but I think we're going to see it. We're going to see it in Canada in 2022. And, you know, as far as entry requirements right now, like, we're still talking about just two doses, but I think going forward in the future, we're going to see probably a third dose. I don't think that's imminent. I don't think that's going to happen like anytime really soon, but maybe in the second half of next year, we might see that possibly.
Right. Okay. Well, kind of moving on from COVID, unfortunately, we're not moving on truly in reality, but we've also kind of had some other vaccine updates this year. First off, there's kind of been some developments in terms of a dengue fever vaccine. What are your thoughts on that? And when do you predict that it might be approved for use in Canada?
Yeah, I think we're going to see a new dengue vaccine out maybe this year, potentially, or well, 2022, I guess. In some countries, it's a product made by a company called Takeda. They're a Japanese pharmaceutical company, and I think they're really, really close. Now, this would be massive, in my opinion, this one would be somewhat useful for travelers, as I understand it from the dosing schedule and stuff. Now, my question right now is, how likely are we to see it in Canada in 2022? That would be the big question. I expect that, you know, Canada is not going to be the first country they're going to try and seek approval in. They're probably going to look at other countries, you know, countries where, you know, dengue is an endemic disease. Canada in the grand scheme of things is a relatively small market, and you can, you know, put in your approvals and everything like, or request for approval. But I think in the grand scheme of things, Canada is not necessarily a top of the list of priorities. So we'll see what happens. I would love to see that vaccine available in 2022. I think there's a lot of evidence that it could be a useful thing for a lot of people going to warm weather places. But I kind of think that if we get it in Canada, it would be much closer to the end of the year. But I expect that it'll be making news this year in a general sense, that it will be approved somewhere in 2022. Just not exactly sure where that's going to be.
Right. So what is the dosing schedule for it? Is it a two dose or is it a three?
It's a two dose schedule, but my understanding is even if you have one dose, that does provide you with some protection. The second dose, I believe it's 3 months later, but you know what? I should have actually looked that up. but my understanding right now is that even if you got one dose, it does provide some protection and that sort of thing. So it does seem a little bit more practical from a traveling point of view. There is another dengue vaccine that's being worked on. That's actually just a single dose. But that one's not imminent. But this one by Takeda is very close at this point. I remember I went to a conference in 2017, I think it was, and they had a big presentation about this vaccine at that conference, and it was quite good. And they talked about everything, but this has been long in the works, and I think they're basically very close to the finish line now, finally. So anyway, I guess we'll see what happens. But from the standpoint of traveling to, you know, warmer weather locations, you're going to places in Asia, places in Africa, even places in Central America and the Caribbean, it would be a huge advantage. Like, you know, I could imagine that it could become, after probably hepatitis A, it could be our second most recommended vaccine if it was something that we that does come to pass, and you know, the numbers look good and everything looks good. I could easily see it being our second most common vaccine that we give out at the clinic. You know, of course, not counting, you know, flu and COVID. I'm just talking about travel shots.
Right. Well, that would be pretty cool if that was the case. I know they've been, from what I looked at, they've been working on it for quite a long time, but it's been pretty difficult to come up with one that protects you pretty effectively. So the other one that I wanted to talk about is that there's a new hepatitis B vaccine that's been approved, at least by the FDA, I believe. And there hasn't been a new vaccine, from what I understand, in over 20 years. So what can you say about that?
Yeah, this is something which I think we are going to see in Canada. It's pretty much a done deal that we'll see it in 2022. This new hepatitis B vaccine, yeah, was approved in the States. And I've read in the documentation, the company that is making it has said that it was specifically in some of the releases that they had that all the approval information has been submitted to Canada. And so they are expecting to get some answers, you know, very soon. So, you know, what that means as far as when it will actually become available and like when, like, you know, we'll be able to order it in our clinic, I don't know the answer to that quite yet. But I think it's safe to say it's going to be approved in 2022. And at some point in 2022, we'll probably have the ability to bring it in.
Cool.
Yeah, like the one thing about this one is I understand it, and I haven't done a really deep dive into it, but like the dosing schedule is pretty much the same as it is for the existing hepatitis B vaccines, that you three doses, like one now, another one in a month, and another one in 6 months. But there does seem to be a higher incidence of converting and creating antibodies, because one of the things with the existing hepatitis B vaccines is they're pretty good. Like they're not like these, you know, sketchy vaccines that have low effectiveness levels. Like, you know, it's like not, but we do know that not everybody has long-term complete immunity. Some people will need a booster over time, but this one, the seroconversion rates are actually percentage-wise really high. And even in people that are immunocompromised, because we know that people with immune compromising conditions, their seroconversion rate for hepatitis B vaccine is a lot lower than healthy people. So this one seems to have much better numbers in that category. So actually I see this being really, really, really useful for people that fall into that category that already have immune compromising conditions. But it'll be useful in general, I think. But I think the first place we'll probably see the real value in using it is in people in those situations.
Right. Yes. When I was looking at it yesterday, it must have been an American source, because they said that it was a big step in the direction of eradicating hepatitis B in the United States. And I was kind of under the impression that had already been done, but I suppose maybe that's not the case.
Yeah, hepatitis B is not extraordinarily, like, it's not rampant everywhere, and certainly the average person, probably their chance of encountering hepatitis B is relatively low. Like, we know most hepatitis B infections are transmitted through, you know, sharing needles, sexual contact, that sort of thing. So hepatitis B, typically speaking, has been most spread sort of in those communities, and certainly, you know, we don't see a lot of, if you're not an IV drug user sharing needles and stuff like that, like those are your highest risk areas. So, you know, but certainly in those groupings, it's still a definitely a thing, and it's not something that, you know, we see it coming from people that have it from other countries. They'll bring it, you know, when they come to Canada, they may have already been infected, and then they might get sick when they're here, because sometimes you may not get sick right away, potentially the chronic phase of the illness. But yeah, it's definitely a big step in the right direction, and because of the fact of its increased effectiveness, that maybe we could, you know, do a better job and into these high risk communities, that we could really tramp down the infections rates there. And that's it. That's pretty much all I can think about going forward on that.
Definitely. Okay, well, there's also been some changes with a few other diseases that we've chatted about before, which are polio and yellow fever. So first off, there's been a pretty serious outbreak of yellow fever in West and Central Africa, specifically in Ghana. What can you say about that?
It's one of those things with yellow fever that, you know, right now with people not traveling as much, you know, it hasn't really been in the news as much as we would think, and not quite as relevant to sort of, you know, day-to-day travel health practice. But definitely, you know, we have seen a bunch of cases. You know, I think the numbers, Jaden, that you had pulled up, October and November, there were about 202 suspected cases and 35 deaths. And I think only 70 confirmed cases, but let's face it, the numbers are always way underreported.
Right.
So, you know, I think right now, like, we know it's definitely circulating in that part of the world. And the thing about yellow fever is once it starts to circulate, the outbreak can really self-perpetuate itself for a bit. So, you know, it's obviously a concern. We always see yellow fever every year. If we did one of these every year, we'd probably always be able to talk about a part of the world where yellow fever is rearing its head. But yeah, right now it's in that part of the world. You know, I think, you know, when you start looking at some of the nearby countries, the borders or the movement of people between the borders there is pretty, things are pretty loose from that standpoint. So we could definitely see a lot more stuff going on into neighboring countries and stuff. So I think, yeah, that's where we're at with yellow fever. Again, just every year we probably would have different places to talk about. This year, I think that Ghana area is probably the area of the biggest concern that we've seen.
Definitely. Well, on a better note, we've made some progress on global polio eradication. So what's the situation there and what's changed?
Well, polio, the thing with polio is that, you know, it's always been more of a political, logistical issue than anything else. Vaccines that we have, it's just a matter of, you know, getting them to people that need them and stopping the spread. One thing that has happened, I think this happened in 2021, that Nigeria was declared a polio-free zone, because when we were looking at countries that we were always talking about that were concerning countries in regards to polio, we always talked about three countries: Nigeria, Afghanistan, Pakistan. Those were our three countries. But Nigeria has basically taken themselves off that list at this point in time. So really, we've got it down to a couple countries. And certainly Afghanistan, you know, there's been a lot of vaccinations done there. And, you know, I think where we really have to go with on this is keeping it going. And you know, Afghanistan is, stuff's been happening there in 2021 and from a political standpoint. So I guess we're going to have to see how we can keep going on that and how we can keep it up. And same thing with Pakistan. We just need to get into remote communities. There's always been concerns about safety of people going in to immunize. You know, certainly people have been killed that have been going into villages to try to vaccinate because they've thought they've been, you know, spies from the West and that sort of thing. So I guess we'll see what happens. But, you know, I think that, you know, if you would have asked people a bunch of years ago, would we still have polio at all in 2021? A lot of the experts would have said no chance. And, but mostly for, like I said, political, logistical reasons, it hasn't happened, but, you know, we're getting closer.
Right. Definitely. I would have thought that this year probably would not have been a very good year, given the kind of U.S. withdrawal from Afghanistan and how kind of, for lack of a better word, messy that was. I wouldn't have predicted that they would have done a good job of on the logistics end of reaching people for polio vaccination. But I suppose they've managed to get, I guess, millions of doses out to kind of more rural areas.
Yeah, and this would probably fall into the political world. And with Jaden, this is kind of your area of knowledge than mine. But I haven't, you know, I'm not going to suggest that I'm anything more than just an observer in the political realm. I read a bit, you know, but I'm just like, that's not my area of expertise. But I have read a few things about how the Taliban in Afghanistan has, surprisingly enough, been really working with Western organizations and aid groups and stuff like that, because they essentially know that they can't do a lot. There's lots of things they can't do being in charge now. And even though some of these things may not be exactly their dream scenarios, you know, like, you know, schools for girls and stuff like that, they're kind of just, in order to keep everything going, they've let a lot of these, you know, aid groups and everything kind of just do their own thing, because they know they need them there, even if some of the things may not necessarily be their favorite thing, you know what I mean? But they're taking the, they need the good, and they tolerate the stuff that, maybe they don't love as much as a result. And so I think that these, a lot of these aid groups have done pretty well on that basis. Does that make sense? Does that match up with what you know, JD?
Yeah. Yeah. It seems like the Taliban is being semi-pragmatic about the aid groups. I can't say that I know that much about specifically about like humanitarian organizations being able to remain in Afghanistan. I know more about like kind of how poorly the US went about withdrawing, but yeah, it seems like it could be worse.
Yeah. Yeah. The one thing I remember reading was this thing about how, this wasn't that long ago, but how the Taliban have basically, the one concern, one of the concerns that most people had is, you know, the treatment of women and that sort of thing. And everyone sort of assumed the first thing the Taliban was going to do was shut down all the schools, like not let girls go to school. But apparently they've kind of let all that keep going because the humanitarian organizations basically said, you got to keep that going if you want us to do the other stuff and that mm-hmm. the Taliban wants. And so the Taliban's basically said, yeah, okay, sure. Let the girls keep going to school, which I guess works out good, but a little bit surprising. And like I said, I think that's why they've had good vaccine penetration in Afghanistan. There are areas that I think they have access to that maybe they didn't even have good access to now that they've kind of come to some arrangements.
Right, right. Well, we'll see how that goes in 2022. There's also kind of been some increasing concern about travel to Mexico in 2021, and I thought that maybe we should chat about that as well. There's kind of been a spike in gang-related activity, specifically, obviously, crime, homicides, that type of thing. So what are your thoughts on that and recommendations for people who might still be traveling to Mexico or who plan on it in 2022?
I think this is something which has changed for me. I, you know, I've been talking to people that have been planning Mexico trips for years and years. And whenever the issue about gang violence, drug violence, generally speaking, my attitude has always been that if you stay in the usual tourist areas and that sort of thing, most of that stuff doesn't happen in areas where, you know, typically you're ever going to end up. If you end up trying to go to more non-touristy areas, that's where the real risk is. But I think what we've seen in 2021 is that's not necessarily the case anymore. There have been things that have happened, and there, even in these areas where tourists have been killed or injured, and caught in the crossfire, so to speak. So I think that now we're kind of getting to the point where even in the touristy areas that there's still some level of risk. So you know, I think that a lot of people have a level of awareness of this, but I think a lot of people, you know, still have the general attitude that if they stay in touristy areas, then maybe they're going to be okay. But I think right now it's something that I think you need to consider. I think, you know, being on a resort, I think is still pretty rock solid, but I think, you know, going out to the market, going out onto the town and stuff, I think I think a lot more caution needs to be considered at this point in time. And before, like I said, I think I wasn't maybe completely dismissive of it, but I think I'm taking it a lot more seriously and making sure I mention it when I'm talking to people going to Mexico. And I don't think it was anywhere near as high a priority a few years ago.
Right, definitely. I think that when there's spikes like this that start to affect tourists, that's usually when that kind of emerges onto our radar, even though a lot of the time that type of stuff has been going on behind the scenes and we just don't see it so much. So I definitely think there's cause for concern there.
Yeah, I agree completely. I think, yeah, this stuff's been going on and it's continuing to go on. It's just when it spills into the areas where it's a little bit relevant to tourism. Like, I've always worked on the basis that, you know, the government tries always to keep the tourism industry going because it's a huge cash cow. Like, brings a lot of money into the country. So I've always sort of worked on the basis that, you know, they're going to do what they can to keep the tourists, keep everything under control. But I think it's got to the point now where it's overflowed to the point where I think you can't necessarily assume that.
Definitely. Yeah. I think that's kind of been the general logic, is obviously you're not going to want to target one of the other major elements of the economy, but I think, yeah, at this point that that's become less of a priority.
I think right now, if you're going to Mexico, you really want to think, depending on where you are, what city you're in. But I think if you, I think, you know, you really want to start thinking a lot more about going off resort and being, you know, how badly do you really need to go do things off resort? So
definitely. All right. Well, anything else you want to mention or chat about in terms of the year in review?
Not really. I hope that we will actually get more traveling stuff going on. I'd love to, you know, spend less time talking about COVID. I've been doing a whole bunch of COVID vaccinations, third doses. And I've been seeing some of my patients who, you know, I would see for travel appointments. And we usually end up talking and saying, geez, I wish you were here because of your a trip as opposed to a COVID vaccine. But I'm still hopeful that we're going to get back to that soon enough. I guess we'll see what happens. I think I'm still, despite all the stuff, I'm still optimistic by nature. So I'd like to think that there's still hope.
Well, I hope that you're right.
Yeah.
I hope that we'll 2022 spells some better travel and other news. So, yeah. All right. Well, thanks for tuning in with us this year and to this week's edition of the Polaris Travel Health Podcast. A reminder that the information and advice that we provide in this podcast are not a substitute for live medical advice tailored to your itinerary and your medical history. If you have questions or want to book an appointment, please head over to our website, polaristravelclinic.ca. We hope you'll tune in again with us next week.
Thanks, Jaden, and Happy New Year to you.
Yes, Happy New Year to you as well.